Patricia Wells is an American restaurant critic and food writer. She's lived in France for many years. She teaches cooking in Paris and Provence. I met with Wells in her teaching kitchen in the middle of her home on the Rue Jacob in the Latin Quarter of Paris. You were traveling in the United States when I talked to you about a year ago, and you were talking about a new book that you were bringing out on truffles, and that's what we're just looking at now. I said, well, you know, truffles isn't something that we can all get, and so is it really worth doing a book?
Well, definitely. First of all, truffles, yes, they're very expensive, and yes, they're very rare, but that doesn't mean we shouldn't talk about them. But that said, all of the recipes, well, most of them, 90% of the recipes are absolutely delicious without truffles. So most of the soups, the egg dishes, the salads, the pastas, they're enhanced by truffles, but that doesn't mean you shouldn't make them. In many, many cases, you can substitute just fresh, what I call Pennsylvania mushrooms. Morels are a really wonderful substitute. But I think that everyone, if their pocketbook allows, should try truffles once in their life. And some of the best ways to use them are either in scrambled eggs with truffles, or to take a soft cheese like a Chaource, which is a cow's milk cheese from the Champagne region and something that's fairly readily available in the United States. And you layer it like a layer cake. You slice the truffles very thinly and put the sliced truffles in between slices of the cheese and let that marinate in the refrigerator for a few days, and it's so fragrant. But the one thing we were just looking at is the way I store truffles. As soon as I get my fresh truffles home, I take a big glass jar, and I fill it to the brim with eggs, with raw whole eggs in the shell, with the truffles. And those you marinate for about 3 days, and everything you make with those eggs tastes of truffles. So you're getting 2 + 2 = 50. You're not losing that truffle at all. And making the scrambled eggs with those kinds of eggs is over the top.
Tell me where you get your truffles.
Well, in the back I have a list of places that you can purchase them from. There's a place called Plantain, which is very luckily about 10 minutes from our house in our farmhouse in Provence. And I've known the people at Plantain for more than 20 years, and they supply me with all of my truffles, and as well as all the top chefs in the world, so we know we're getting top-rate truffles.
Okay. Is there a truffle season?
Absolutely. In fact, I was talking to a winemaker, our winemaker, in fact, whose brother-in-law is one of the men that we go truffle hunting with, and he has already found, this was 1st of October, he had already found truffles on his property. But generally, the season doesn't start until sometimes early November, but generally late November. And depending on the year, it will go on to through the end of February, maybe early March. So it's a fairly short season, but long enough to enjoy it.
And if the truffles aren't found for that year, what happens to them?
They just go back into the earth and become soil. Oh, of course. So same with wild mushrooms. They actually, the truffle begins its life as a little, they grow at the root of basically oak trees mostly. Oak trees, hazelnut trees, walnut trees, but the majority are oak trees at the roots. And they have a symbiotic relationship in that the tree and the roots gives, because they don't have any sunlight, they're in the ground, gives them the chlorophyll and things they need to grow. And the way they're hunted, there are two specific ways, one with a dog, a trained dog. And I've been out with dozens of dogs, different dogs. They should generally female because, you know, we have a better sense of smell. That's true of dogs. But dogs, their sense of smell is like 10,000 times of ours. I mean, they can just really, and it's amazing to watch them. The dog just wanders around and it like screeches to a halt like a cartoon character and starts scratching into the soil. And depending on how they've been trained, some will just point and they won't dig, and then the master will dig up the truffle. Some actually dig up the truffle, and I have seen, I'm not lying, I have seen a dog who would, he would dig up the truffle, put it in his mouth, and trot over to the master and drop the truffle at his feet. I said, you could just sit in a chair on your cell phone and let the dog do all the work.
I've seen truffles, and I've eaten truffles, but when they come out of the ground, how big are they?
The average size is about the size of a golf ball, I would say. And that's usually about 1.5 to 2 ounces. And in fact, I have in here what to do with 2 ounces of truffles. I have all the different things you can do. And I say romantic dinners for two. You're not going to have a dinner party for 50 for truffles generally. But I have seen them as much as almost a pound.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
So, you know, but bigger is not better.
Oh.
I bought a big truffle last year just to show the students and to wow them. And the problem with it is what you want are nice uniform slices. And with a big truffle, it's a little harder to get more uniform slices. But it was fun. It was exciting to see and to use.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned the students, and you have special truffle dinners that you do. Or, I'm sorry, truffle weeks.
Yes. We have a one truffle week every January, usually around the 20th of January. It's a 5-day class. And all we do is eat and cook truffles all week long. It's magnificent, every meal, except for desserts. The restaurant we go to, he usually does a truffle ice cream, which is delicious. But I decided in the book not to put any desserts because panna cotta, truffle panna cotta is kind of nice, but I think by the time you get to dessert, you want something else. You want chocolate or apple tart or something like that.
Yeah, I think so too. Talk about some of the recipes in the book and whether you really need truffles for them.
As I said earlier, about 90% of the recipes can be made without truffles. We have lots of salads, like a salad of endive and pine nuts and chives, which is nice if you add truffles to it. Or I have, in fact, we're just looking at this now, it's a Parmesan pine nut and truffle gratin, where in tiny baby gratin dishes we have grated Parmesan and toasted pine nuts and let that melt under the broiler and then top it with truffles and a little more cheese and then put them under the broiler again. That's really lovely. But there are a lot of soups. There's this artichoke soup. There's a pumpkin soup, celery root soup, potato soup. All delicious, totally on their own. So it's definitely a book worth buying. But also, aside from the recipes, I really did a tremendous amount of research of folklore, lots of wonderful quotes, the history of truffles, and so on. You know, they were banned by the Catholic Church because they were symbol of the devil at one point. Uh-huh. You know, they're all great stories, and these Napoleon stories of eating lots of truffles and finally getting his wife pregnant. I think what I love about it is, you know, man today feels as though he's tamed everything in the world, but we haven't tamed the truffle.
Well, you don't find truffles everywhere. They come from certain trees, but they're only in some parts of France.
That's correct. Where we live in Provence is now the largest. It produces 90% of the truffles in France. Mm. The Southwest, the Périgord used to be, that's died out quite a bit. There are truffles in Spain and in Italy. And, you know, in the United States, there are many, many people working on cultivating truffles, and they can be cultivated, but it's pretty much, it's chancy, it's iffy. I've visited people both in Australia and in New Zealand who have worked to create truffle plantations, because what they did in the 60s, scientists developed a way to inject the spores of the truffle in oak tree saplings, and they still are only getting about a 5% success rate on those. So it's a gamble. It's a big gamble. But there are a lot of people spending a lot of money on that gamble.
And are they doing it in the United States? Where is that?
Yes, in California. There's in California. And I've had truffles from Tennessee. There are truffles in Tennessee and North Carolina, for sure.
Great.
And I've met people who are setting up those plantations, truffle plantations.
What about the white truffle? I've read about that. I haven't seen it.
Well, the white truffle is totally different species from the black truffle. And they're only found in Italy. Although last year there were some found in Provence in our area, and they're not sure how they got there, but they found a few.
Oh.
They're amazing, and I wish somebody would give me $1 million to do a book on white truffles. I would love to research that, but I have very little experience with them except having them in restaurants and having them shaved over pasta and so on. I haven't cooked with them very much, so.
Okay.
And they're if you think black truffles are expensive, white truffles are much more expensive. I just had some last week, the first truffles at Robuchon's Atelier. He did it with spaghetti. Unbelievable.
Oh, wow.
When I talked to you last year, you were just about to bring out your app that people could download so that they could look for restaurants.
Right.
And now that's in full force.
Right. In April, we launched the Food Lover's Guide to Paris app for the iPhone. And the question is, what are you going to do it for Android and everybody else? And I say, once we break even on this project, then we'll go ahead and do it. It was a very expensive project, but I'm so glad I did it. It's been quite successful. We're happy with it. And what's exciting is that I can come home from a restaurant, or even this morning we're sampling some pastries from a new pastry shop, and I can, after our interview, I can sit down and click in pictures and write it up, and it can be on your app this afternoon, which I think is incredible. Yeah, I can update like that.
Oh.
And you can update it by just clicking a button.
Wow.
So it's been really fun. For those who don't listeners who don't know The Food Lover's Guide to Paris, it was my first book, which came out in 1984, and it's restaurants, wine shops, cafes, bistro, kitchenware shops, huge glossary in the back. And I'm finishing up the book. The book will be finished up by the end of the year. It probably won't be out until 2014. But unlike the app, it will have a lot of specific photos and recipes and little boxes, informative boxes.
Okay. So to just be clear, you're not only brought out the app, but you're also updating the book, The Food Lover's Guide.
Yes.
And that's going to come out again.
Yes, Food Lover's Guide to Paris as a book.
Okay.
Yes.
Good. And that actually was where I first met you, literarily, and using the book, too. It was wonderful.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much.
And so what's new in the Food Lover's Guide besides new restaurants?
Oh, it's astonishing. Well, there are lots of little, a lot of things. One trend, which is very different from even 99, which is the last edition of the book, restaurants that are open 7 days a week, which is fantastic for wanting to find a place to eat on Sunday and Monday when you didn't used to be able to find places. Restaurants and bakeries have expanded where they'll have like 12 or 15 shops around town, which I'm all for. If there's good quality, like Eric Kaiser, he has about 10 or 15 boulangeries. And if it's good quality, I'm all for people expanding, and everybody should be able to make some money in their work. Or like Robuchon with his two restaurants. So you'll see more of that. Many more casual places, which I think is what we're all looking for.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of small places in out-of-the-way neighborhoods that probably people wouldn't know about, the 10th, the 9th, the 18th, the 19th, arrondissement of Paris. Lots of young chefs who might have tried to go the Michelin star route are instead saying, I don't need it.
Good.
I can do it on my own. And there are lots and lots of wonderful young chefs out there today.
Mm-hmm.
Coffee's become a really huge thing here, especially the Australian and American young guys who are working really hard. Koutoum, the coffee we're drinking today on Rue Babylone, they're very intense about the kinds of sourcing their coffee, roasting their coffee. In fact, I went in there yesterday morning to try to get some decaffeinated beans. He says, no, I roast those on Monday, and they're usually gone by Friday. So, and this was Sunday morning, so
wow.
I didn't get my decaffeinated beans, but I got some other good ones.
Do you find, I think Paris responds a lot to waves of immigrants that come in. And there are certain times, you know, there were Algerians who came here, and obviously there was a Vietnamese influence. So what are you seeing now?
There's still a good Chinese ethnic influence, Vietnamese, Moroccan. Mm. The Jewish quarter has a lot of new charcuterie and so on.
It's really great that the young people are continuing restaurants and continuing to work in this.
Yes, there's a real influence of that. And not just restaurants, but wine bars and little shops. There's also a new trend of all the food trucks that kind of roam around. That's becoming very popular.
Great. Yeah.
And hamburgers. Hamburgers are the in thing now, too. I have to say, that's not something I want to spend my life researching.
No, no.
I mean, how good can a hamburger be, frankly? I'll probably get shot for that.
Are the young people doing the apprentice route as they used to, where they would sort of work with a well-known chef? And
I'd say most of them have worked with well-known chefs. Mm-hmm. Alain Passard has been very influential with young chefs starting up. Robuchon, a lot of his acolytes have gone on. Most of them, yes. Most of them, I would say, have true professional classical French training and then go off on their own. But there's some who are self-taught, which is fine, too.
Yeah, okay. You had talked a little bit about getting into an export business, that you had looked at that, at bringing some of these things to America.
We did. We spent about 2 years working on it with our friend Rolando Baramundi, who imports all the fabulous products from Italy. And when we started out, we said, okay, we'll do this as long as it's fun. Yeah. And it stopped being fun, and the economic crisis came about at the same moment, and we said, okay, enough. Mm-hmm. We're not going to go ahead with this. And I have to say that I also, all through the time we were researching olive oils and vinegars and specialty products, I kind of kept thinking, do these really need to be shipped across the ocean? I just felt ecological. I mean, not that we should not use Italian products or French products. Obviously, the best we do want. But I'm not sad that we didn't go any further. I think we stopped at the right time before we got in trouble.
Oh, okay. So you're not, I sort of had the feeling that after the economy came back, you might be going back into it, but it sounds like no.
Well, you know, actually the way I do it is through my Amazon store. If you go on my website, patriciawells.com, and you click on Amazon store, I keep that totally up to date. And so it's all the products that I love to use, both food products and baking equipment and so on, that are in the Amazon store already, if that makes sense to you. Mm-hmm. And then you just buy it through Amazon.
Oh, okay.
So I think that's a more ecological way to deal with it. They're bringing it over, and you know, I think we weren't ready to deal with all of that shipping and selling, and you know, selecting the products is one thing, and then going on to do other things I think that's not where I decided I wanted to put my energy.
Okay, I can see that. Well, what's on your plate now besides always updating the app?
Well, I have another book that's been completed and is in the editing process based upon my cooking school classes and recipes that we do in the class. And kind of the basis of it is it's a teaching book, but it's also, I think that as cooks, there's some days we really want to be challenged and we want to bring to the table this beautiful puff pastry that we are so proud of. And the other days, all we want to do is get food on the table, you know? So in many recipes, I have your challenging way to make it and your easy way to go buy store-bought puff pastry or make your own puff pastry. Yeah.
That's a wonderful
idea. And there's some challenging recipes in there, but then there are also lots and lots of quick and easy. And so that's what we do in class, is work on both ends.
Oh, that's so smart because, you know, I was watching the movie the Julia Child's movie.
Right.
Julia or whatever it was. And there was a time when I was kind of not working my way through Julia Child's, but certainly using her, but I don't anymore. So to do it, to find easy ways is just great idea.
Well, it's interesting. In Provence, I have the stove that Julia Child had when she was living in Provence. And so on Friday of the class, we always do a Julia recipe just, you know, to channel Julia on her stove. And we've been making her ratatouille this summer with products from our garden. Mm. And it is a fabulous recipe. It's very different from all the others. It's very chunky vegetables rather than cut up very finely. It's a little complicated, but not really. I mean, ratatouille is not a quickie, easy recipe anyway. But it's sort of to pay homage to her.
Oh, how nice.
Yeah.
Oh, that's great. Maybe we should give listeners an idea of the classes that you do in case they wanted to come over and partake of them. And you were saying that a lot of the participants are people who've been there before and come back.
Yes, we have. I haven't counted up, but we have students who've been 6 and 7 times to classes.
Cool.
So we start the series in January, as I said, with our Truffle Week in Provence. And then in spring, I have three week-long classes in Paris, right here in the studio. And I'm going to start next year for the first time. We're only going to do recipes from Paris, establishments. So, yeah, we'll do, you know, maybe this apple tart we just sampled, so that they have a connection, and when they go to a restaurant or go to a bakery, they can say, I can make this. Mm-hmm. We'll make our own sourdough bread. That's something else we do in Provence. We make sourdough bread, and we make quick breads. And so the 3 weeks in Paris are all specialty Paris shops and restaurants. And then we have one day where we do a market and go to a 3-star restaurant together. And on another day, we go to visit the Poilin Bakery, and we spend some time in the morning down in the basement watching them bake the bread and their beautiful apple tarts. And then we go to the Dernier Goutte with Juan Sanchez, and we have a wine tasting. Mm, and in Provence, the week-long classes actually start on Sunday night when I cook the meal. And then through the week, we cook mostly with ingredients from our garden. We have a huge vegetable garden and tons of herbs. We do wonderful herb salads, which I love. And then on Wednesday, we go to usually visit our winemaker, Yves Gras in Gigondas, and then we go to a lovely restaurant during that time. And throughout the week, we sample wines from the region, Gigondas and Vacaras and Châteauneuf-du-Pape and all those wonderfuls. We do have one foreign wine called Champagne, because I think you have to have champagne every now and then. And my husband, Walter, gives a knife sharpening class. We talk about the regional wines, and we also do an olive oil tasting. Mm. Teaching people how to purchase olive oil in the United States. Mm-hmm. And this is actually a cute story, because one of the oils that I love is called Castellas, and it's pretty readily available in the United States. And he went in, and I also showed them how to find the date, you know, the use-by date on it. And so he went into, it was either a Whole Foods or Williams-Sonoma, and he saw the use-by date was December 2012. So he bargained with the clerk, and he got 50% off. So I feel I taught well.
Well, that brings me to another question. What are the skills of the people who take part in the class? If someone who doesn't have cooking skills comes, will they feel out of place?
Not at all. I've had people who didn't know how to use a knife. Or one gentleman was reading a recipe out loud and said, you know, put this in the bowl of a food processor. And he said, well, what would that be? But I've had everything from total complete novices to professional chefs. So at the whole range. And I pair people up, and I'm very careful about who works with whom. So if someone is a real novice, I put them with someone who's generally a good cook. Mm-hmm. And we also have started a new a companion program, meaning if not in Paris, because we don't have the room for that here, but if you're here and your husband wants to go to Provence with you but doesn't want to cook, mm-hmm. We have a companion program where they can come to all the dinners.
That's good.
And it's really been nice, because then they get to see what their partner's creating and meet all the other people that person might be talking about all week. So that's been very successful.
Well, thanks for sharing both this nice pastry and all the projects you're doing right now.
Thank you very much. It's been a pleasure. Thanks.